Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
What's good, internet, and welcome to another episode in Waypoint Radio's Holiday Extravaganza. I'm your host, Austin Walker. Joining me today, Ricardo Contreras.
Yo.
Gita Jackson.
Hi, I'm Gita.
Rob Zachney.
Hello, hello.
And Patrick Klepek.
What kind of tea, y'all?
Got? Yeah, what's
not
your,
a tea
what
person, but I'm curious what you went for.
I have just some very average bag tea, constant comment. It just smells so nice. It's a black tea with an orange rind, essentially. It's not very fancy, but it smells very, very good. And it's nice to drink it without anything in it, too. I like that.
Nice. Rob?
Just having an English breakfast.
An English breakfast tea here at 4:18 p.m.
I've got that Baja Blast tea.
Kato. So this won't make, I don't know what's on the pod, what's off the pod, what order the pods are, but what Taco Bell did you eat?
I got my
did
order,
you
which is
a Gordita Dia.
It's my order
route?
From Taco Bell is a bad order. It is a shameful okay. order. I feel
tell
shame
me
every
you,
time I
when
eat
I asked,
it.
When
as
I
opposed
asked,
to all those honorable,
this was my go-to stoner food from high school up until maybe like a year ago when I stopped being able to eat most of the things that they sell at Taco Bell. So I really want to know what your order is right now.
Well, I knew I was onto something when I asked it and you paused for just a little
bit next
too
time,
long.
Kato, you just have to say it
Kato
out.
Got
you say
six
it chalupas. Straightforward. Like it's nothing, and no one would blame.
No, I would have, because I don't eat Taco Bell, so I would have been just like, "Oh, sure, yeah, that's Taco
so
Bell."
It's a
don't sigh, just deliver.
It's a gordita crunch, right? So with a nacho Doritos Locos Taco as the crunchy taco in that cheesy gordita, the Crunchwrap Supreme and a Burrito Supreme. With a some form of Mountain
sounds
Dew
like an order
Baja
Taco
Blast.
Is what I'm saying.
Why did you
so
say
far,
that was a bad order?
That's
still like
respect
a God's
you.
It's too much food. I won't need to eat again until 2 p.m. tomorrow. Like, it is currently 4:20. What up?
The burrito was possibly unnecessary, but I respect it. My order is almost the same. I'm cheesy gordita crunch with beans instead of the meat. Crunchwrap Supreme, ditto with the beans for meat, and then just a bean burrito.
Yeah.
Because I just have like
cheesy
taste.
Toasted breakfast burrito looks amazing.
This is not the podcast we're doing. We're doing a podcast idea submitted to us by one, Gita Jackson, who we were like, we got to figure out a game to play. We got to figure out some sort of conversational, you know, icebreaker, something to have us have a little fun. And what did you come up with?
Never have I ever. I just really, really, this is a game I have played with and without alcohol, but was for a time my favorite drinking game. And I like it so much because it invites conversations where people have about why they've had certain experiences or why something that is ubiquitous has just never happened to them. If we were playing like a normal game of Never Have I Ever, I could say something like, never have I ever had a relative in my immediate family who's voted for Trump. And anyone else who's had that in their life would have to put a finger down or just indicate to me that has happened to them.
Never and, have know. I ever insert Kato's Taco Bell order.
Sure.
Exactly. Exactly.
So what I will say is we mostly got people who submitted interesting things that probably haven't happened to us, but we'll see. Maybe I'm wrong about that. There's also certain trends that appeared. So it's almost like I think I like about what ended up happening is enough stories overlapped in certain ways where it's almost like the viewers or the listen, not the viewers, the listeners are playing along with us because certain people have stories about times similar things happened to them, even though they didn't actually mean to collaborate together. So there's some fun stuff that'll appear as we go through.
Oh, I'm excited.
This list. So let me kind of kick it off here with James, who says, and I'm gonna put words in people's mouths here because I had to summarize a lot of their stories into a never have I ever claim. So never have I ever. I guess this is the case. This is the opposite. This is actually wrong. This is a story. I can actually say this is true. Never have I, Austin, ever had my parents call a game company on my behalf.
That's fucking incredible. I have to hear the story.
What?
James says, when I was 5, I loved playing Chao Garden in Sonic Adventure 2 Battle for the GameCube. There was one specific Chao that I spent weeks training and grew an attachment to. The problem, I accidentally deleted him out of the game somehow. Oh, no. As a result, I had a meltdown as a 5-year-old, or as 5-year-olds do, and made my parents call Sega of America to try to get them to retrieve the Chao. It didn't work. Pretty sure I'm the only one who's ever melted down over a Chao that extreme. Anyone else?
I just think that's lovely, though. Like, I know relationships with parents are complicated, but shout out to your mom.
Okay. So, I have like stories, I have stories in this that go multiple directions. I'll start with the one that is closest to the premise of the. Yeah. Well, I've been writing about games since I was like 12, 13.
Right.
I've had a lot of involvement in game companies that involve my parents. So the one that's most directly like this is when we got Turtles in Time for the Super Nintendo. It was like one of the most anticipated games in this household. Like, Turtles were so big with us. Like, you know, we were like just past Ghostbusters. So Ghostbusters kind of happened, but like we were there for the full arc of Turtles. You know, watching that first movie and being able to say, damn, with Raphael was like a seminal moment. I was like, I get to swear because he did it in the movie and it's a Turtles
Hell
movie.
Yeah.
So that game comes home and we had played it in the arcade, but never beaten it because we never had enough quarters to do it. And so it was like a big moment when it comes home. Well, it turns out it's an arcade game. And when you bring that home, that arcade game is like an hour.
Yeah.
Like 90 minutes or whatever when you have unlimited continues.
Yeah.
And we beat it. Told my mom we beat it. And we didn't rent it. Like, she was like, this is such a big deal. We didn't buy games when I was a kid. Right. Like, we rented them and then rented them again if you wanted to play it again. It just, those cartridges, you know, I get people complaining about $70 games, but like that was the norm. Like, some games were $80 or $90, and it was just like my parents could not afford that and would not afford that. And so we beat that. My mom is fucking furious. She's like, what do you mean you beat the game in an hour and a half? Like, this was supposed to be like the next 2 months was this game. And I don't know who she called. I'm sure she just flipped through the back and like whatever the customer service called. I don't think it was Konami. It was probably Nintendo. But I remember her calling and just being furious that we beat it so fast was essentially all I sort of surmised from the call. And
they must have had a playbook for a call like that, right?
Yeah, I'm sure.
I would imagine. I would be curious what it was. There was no resolution. You know, they can't. There was no. We'll refund you.
Right.
You know, you couldn't return games back. There are no refund systems back then. To like, usually with physical games, like you had it and
it's yours.
Brought it home, and unless that shit's broken, like that's just it.
Am I misremembering a small window of time where you could, and then all of a sudden everyone had to implement if it's opened, you can't anymore?
Yes.
Because I feel like everyone was doing it for a second.
EB absolutely had a system. EB had a system that they accepted returns within like a week or something.
Right.
And so I absolutely had friends who would buy a game, beat it, return it.
I have so many memories of just going back to EB Games and not really knowing why. And I feel like, you know, as a child, because my older brother was the one that was buying games, like buying physical copies of games. I was the one renting shit because my parents were like, you're a child. And we don't know whether that's expensive hobby is something permanent or not, which fair enough to my parents. But yeah, my older brother, like I would just always be like on that mall trip and be like, but we hate this store. And he was just like, I mean, yeah, but we're here again.
So the short version of the other version of that story is that there was a time when I first started getting contacted by PR people, and I believe it was Sega. Sega called my house, one phone number, just the house phone. And my mom picks up the phone, and there was very clearly an older woman asking to speak with me. And she did not hand the phone to me. She instead quizzed this this woman, who was just a totally nice PR person. She's like, why the fuck are you calling a child? What? Who are you? Like, why do you? And like,
well, have you seen the movie Big?
Oh my god!
We got there. It was all good. My mom then picked up another phone in the house and listened to the conversation.
Wow.
Fair, responsible thing to do. Man, what the parents should have done.
Remember how sometimes you'd be on the phone and you'd like hear, like, I think there's an open line on this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Like, it was like realizing the Stasi were on you or something like that, where it's like,
were you guys ever, I feel like this was mostly a middle school girl thing when cell phones and like private lines started being a real thing in the early 2000s, but the three-way call bullying. Awful. Just awful. What? Absolutely. Wait, been on phone calls with people that I now... Three-way calls.
I never had, so I never did the private line.
Sure.
So
they depict this in Mean Girls in such frightening accuracy.
Ooh.
It's like a documentary, that portion of the movie.
Yeah,
that shit happened to girls, where like I would absolutely be talking to someone, assuming that we were the only person having a part of the phone call. Then I'd hear someone snicker, and I would be like, I am being bullied right now.
That's brutal. That sucks. I had a line in my room. I mostly used it to play virtual online because you could do phone-based...
What?
Computer to computer calls, yeah.
That rocks. That fucking rocks, dude.
It was weird. Anyway, the next one. Someone want to read this one? Jack. Jack has seen this, so it has to be someone who hasn't.
I have not.
Okay.
So, never have I ever seen a unique glitch in a game. When I was a kid, I was playing Sonic Adventure 2. Sonic Adventure 2 Battle on GameCube.
On GameCube, again, back-to-back emails.
Wait, what is happening
here?
I swear
to God. I was like,
wow.
I thought I was losing my
twice.
Mind.
I was
came
like,
up twice in a row in like some of the first ones that came in. I was like, if we get a third one of these, I'm quitting. This is a sign. I'm quitting to become a Sonic Adventure 2 Battle pro.
It's like, what's weird is, until today, I had never heard of this game.
What?
Are we sure this existed before this podcast?
What? Yes,
no,
this is
I'm
a
kidding.
Yes.
Part of this game.
And in the first level, City Escape, I did something that made the skateboard stick to Sonic's feet even after that segment was supposed to be over. Ooh. I've never seen this glitch online and could never replicate it.
Yeah, this has never happened to me either. I only run into glitches that are the big boy glitches that everybody knows.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't even manage to get the Sims with their peeing fire glitch when that was happening. That was a great glitch. That was probably something that the Sims developers left in for testing and then forgot to take out. Just like, oh, this Sim is peeing fire. I guess there's a bug still in this game. But I really wish they hadn't removed it. It rocked. Just occasionally, your Sims would pee fire.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I feel like this is a type of story that is quickly becoming rarer and rarer just because everyone can share everything now, right? Like, I feel like this was more likely to happen to any of us younger because there was less people uploading every little glitch
that
happens
in the
game.
Be like, when the pirate ship lifted out of the ocean for me in Assassin's Creed Origin, I posted it online and someone else was like, yeah, me too, here it is. This is the same fucking thing.
Uh-huh. Concurrently with Jason Schreier finding tiny trees all over Cyberpunk, I saw another person posting a video of tiny trees everywhere in Cyberpunk.
There was one that someone wrote in for this that is it's the thing of like, this is a famous glitch, but it's the sort of famous glitch that never happens and they got it. And so I'm going to read that one. It's from further down in the list. Jay wrote in and said, this isn't strictly something that's happened to no one else, but as I understand it, it's an extremely rare occurrence, especially in casual play. Story takes place several years ago, but it stuck with me. I've been a huge Chrono Trigger fan since the first time I played the game, and it's one of the games I've spent the most amount of time playing over the years. So I had long felt that I'd seen everything after getting all the endings, doing all the optional quests. I replayed the game often, usually starting a new game plus file from whenever I'd finished the last time. My new quest became getting all of my characters to max levels and stats just so I could stay in the world a bit longer. I knew all the little tricks and manipulations to get the optimum equipment, and I knew which enemies dropped single-use stat improvement items. I decided to hit level 99 in part by beating an endgame dungeon which can be completed multiple times. The dungeon is difficult in a regular new game playthrough, but after multiple new game pluses, the enemies were a breeze. abilities, allowing me to rack up EXP and stat improvement items. After I finished a battle, waiting to see if an enemy had dropped one of the stat increase items I expected, I instead heard the enemy dropped an item sound accompanied by a garbled text box. I was confused for a moment, but then I realized what had happened. I'd finally gotten the Wolf Lobe Sword. I've included the link which describes the glitch in a bit more detail, shoutouts to Chrono Compendium, but basically what happens is that instead of an item an enemy that the enemy should drop, the game will give you the first four swords for Chrono at the same time. A screenshot at the link will show the garbled display vaguely seems to read Wolf Lobe, which gives the glitch its name. It was wild to finally see in my own original cartridge and hardware, and it sort of felt like one of those early internet rumors, and like every other popular game at the time, Chrono Trigger had plenty of them surrounding it, but the Wolf Lobe sword is real, kind of. And I'm going to share the image because it does, it sort of says Wolf Lobe, but that doesn't show really how cursed it looks. Because it's it's like the B is not a B. The B is like a garbled.
Mm-hmm. This is like you need to, there's dust in the cartridge in it.
Yeah.
It's almost a Zalgo.
Exactly.
Basically.
Yeah. It's almost a Zalgo, if you don't know what a Zalgo text is. Yeah. And what's amazing is, could you imagine this happening to you in real life where you're like, the image that we show is from the Gato fight, which is one of the earlier boss fight, or not even a boss fight, it's an early encounter. Can you imagine getting it from an early encounter and being like, yeah, I got four early game swords right away. And everyone at school would call you a piece of shit liar.
Yeah.
100%.
It's Monday. Yeah. We can't come over to the weekend and check it, you asshole.
Yeah, exactly. It's so funny.
Speaking of that, did anyone seriously never do this next thing?
Wait. Where are you at? Are you back up at the top?
Looking at Mike.
Yeah. I must have done it.
No, I can do this one. I can do this one.
Gita, I can do this one.
Never have I ever spun a BS tale about a game. I have very, very good memories of other people doing this, but like I am the character in Knives Out that's afraid of lying, that will vomit if I lie. Like I was so, as a kid, honestly, I was so concerned that people would find out that I lied about things that I was forced to be honest. Just on a hypothetical, essentially, a hypothetical fear of embarrassment. As an adult, I lied to my parents all the time. No fear about that. But lying to friends and acquaintances, all the fears about that. So no, I never tried to make up stories about how much I liked games. Like, especially also because girls, when they talk about liking games, everything they say is going to be downplayed regardless. So if you make up something about how good you are, you're going to be called a poser even more so. When I was like a person of the age making up BS tales about games. Anyway, well, Mike wrote in should have read their blurb, but Mike wrote, have you ever told a bullshit story about a video game when you were a kid? Stories like my uncle who works at Nintendo said, or how you caught Sonic and Pokemon, but the stage deleted itself. And I knew that I would be shit tested by my peers so much more harshly if I did
that. I did this constantly.
I knew it!
So the thing is, sometimes true anecdotes are a little boring, and you have to give them a little garnish of embellishment.
Oh, you were just a fucking storyteller. Yeah, okay.
A rocking crypt keeper over here.
A thing that, I would hold forth about my various accomplishments and adventures in the TIE Fighter games. And one of the recurring features of that series of stories I told in seventh grade at lunchtime was that all my achievements were eventually stolen by Delta Squadron, which is usually in the TIE Fighter games. Beta and Delta Squadrons show up as NPC squadrons, usually of bombers and such. TIE Interceptor Squadrons tend to be IOTA and ADA squadrons. Alpha Squadron tends to be your TIE Fighters. That's just generally how it goes. And so I would tell stories about all the various feats of fighter pilot derring do that I would perform. And then how the kills, because remember, TIE Fighter, I think TIE Fighter operated this way. I know for sure X-Wing did. It was a last hit system. Mm-hmm. So if you wanted to rack up, because the game tracked all your kills, if you wanted to say, I killed a Star Destroyer, you had to get the very last hit on that Star Destroyer that caused it to be destroyed. Usually in missions, this was hard to do because they were under fire from other capital ships. They were getting blasted by bombers. But I would spin stories about, like, I would have had a kill on an, you know, ISD or a Victory Star Destroyer or a frigate. But sadly, yet again, Delta Squadron swept in. And at the last minute, overdue as always, they delivered the volley of missiles that I've been waiting the entire mission for. But only after I'd done all the hard work of killing them did that happen. Now, there's a grain of truth to
this. That made it personal for me.
The grain of truth was, this shit kind of did happen all the time in TIE Fighter. But I just created a narrative arc where, like, it's always the same squadron. The answer is no, it wasn't. It was always, like, some fucking NPC, like, pilot, like, just showed up and did some shit.
But you were telling the story, like, and those motherfuckers showed up again!
Yes!
Right. Yeah.
And people,
it's a funnier story.
And that latter thing is a story. That, like, that is what makes it a story that people wanted to hear. I don't know why, but it just is. And so I was like, people seem to enjoy this and they think it's funny, so I will do this.
I tell my quick, very short story. My favorite version, my favorite time a child lied to me when I was a child about a game.
Oh, yes.
Pokemon, the card game, and we're all very into it in the fourth grade. Mm. And there was this kid who was kind of unpopular because he, like, I mean, he sucked on the end of his shirt, which is always a sign that that kid's not very popular. But he was trying to impress everyone by saying that he had a Charizard card. Not only did he have a Charizard card, he had four of them. He had four Charizards. Wow. And we all knew right away that motherfucker was lying to us. We're like, okay, Jared, show us your fucking Charizards, Jared. Where are the Charizards? We all got our decks out, Jared. Where are they? And he was like, no.
Charizard is like an early super rare.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of the, it was at the time one of the rarest cards. It would be remarkable.
So
to
he
have
had to
one.
Be like, I have four. He couldn't he, just
yeah,
be
to
like,
have four is just like unfucking
legal. Come on.
That's the tournament legal limit to amount of Charizards you could put in a deck. Therefore, you needed four to be a real player.
I see.
Amazing. Gotcha. Oh, we asked him to bring his Charizards to class just for us to see. We weren't going to steal them. We just wanted to see that none of us had seen a Charizard card either. So personal curiosity there in case he's telling the truth. But he told us that he couldn't bring them in because they were so valuable that he's put them in a locked safe that it was located in the center of the earth.
Okay. All right, I was going to say, when you Darius, said the locked safe, I was like, you know what? Honestly, I kind of believe that part. And then the second part.
You almost
you had us in the first half.
I'm not going to lie.
I was like, okay, it would be the safe deposit box would be where I stopped believing this. I was like, Darius, that's a little rich, don't you think?
Yeah.
But he has some sort of Dr. Evil, like, fucking, like, elevator to the Earth's core where it's like, yeah, my dad put in a lockbox in the center of the Earth.
Is enough science class to know that you can't go to the center of the Earth. Like, that was enough science lessons for us to be like, it's molten lava in there. Like, how are you doing that, dude?
God. I mean, Ninja Turtles teaches you that you can't just put shit in the center of the Earth. You need, like, a technodrome.
Exactly. Uh-huh. If you told me I had a technodrome, different story.
Yeah.
Different story. We got a few of this next one. Has anyone done this thing? And I guess it's maybe a little bit broader than the first one here is. I've done it. So I can't think of the specific time when I've done it, but I would say I've probably done this year, and I just don't remember it. You might have to skim the story
too.
to know what it is. And if none of us have, if we've all done it in some way, and in fact, I can hear Patrick saying he's done it in my mind.
Well, okay, sort of. All right, so I
you'll read it.
John says, I was playing Final Fantasy 13 on Xbox 360 that I rented from Gamefly. I made it to what I believe was the final boss. I beat its first form. And revealed its true form, and it cast a spell called Doom. 2 seconds later, my Xbox shut down, and upon restarting, I was greeted with the red ring of death. I returned the game before getting a new Xbox 360. I surrendered to the power of Doom.
And to that, I basically said, never have I ever accepted a failure as an alternate game ending. And basically just been like, I guess that's the end of my fucking game. I guess that's it. I lost to Doom.
Right.
See, I haven't done that, but the closest I can think of is, again, we didn't buy games when I was growing up, and so we rented them, and when I got into JRPGs, it was always a crapshoot because games were saved to the cartridge. They weren't saved to your machine, and it wasn't until the PS1 era that you could have a memory card that was independent of the game. So if you were buying a game that saved progress that wasn't password dependent, you were handing your save back to the store and whoever got that cartridge next. And that's one of the places there was a limit. You couldn't just like come back, rent Final Fantasy III again, and like just keep looping the system like you're at a library. Right, you had to like, you could come back like a day later. They're like, just come back tomorrow, like just give someone else a chance to get it. And so I was like slowly chipping my way through Final Fantasy VI and made it to the, you know, the second half of the game towards the end where you go to the city in the sky, and had to return it. And when I got the game back, the save was overwritten. So it was like, you know, 45, 50 hours or whatever, just poof.
Yeah.
And I've never done it. I've never gone back. Never. I that was like the second time I lost a save in that kind of fashion. That was the most dramatic.
Yeah.
But I was just like, that's it. I guess I made it to the end. I wanted to fight Kefka and it just wasn't going to happen. And so, I've just never seen the true ending of Final Fantasy.
This has come up before, and people are going to yell at me if I don't ask this. Have you seen the back half of the game though?
Yeah, yes.
Where it's the other world.
So when you've made this illusion before,
okay. I was like, people have been confused about people, this.
Like I have seen the second the World of Doom.
Yeah, okay.
Like,
a lot of people think you've not seen the World of Doom.
No,
about to beat the game.
No. This is
clear as possible.
I have fucking suplexed a train back the fuck off.
Patrick Clever defending his gamer card.
I need that sentence on a soundboard. Yeah. Just that sentence.
You don't do that to the World of Doom. No. So,
I've definitely quit games when they've crashed. But like, I guess that's it. I'm done with that game. But the thing that comes to mind for me is actually Red Dead Redemption 2, which is I got to that cool big city, Saint-Denis, and I was like, I like it here. The end. And then that's it. Like, I liked it there. I didn't want to keep playing. Like, I was kind of at the end of my rope with that game anyway. I really like that city. I don't want to stay in that. I don't want to leave that city. What if this is Arthur Morgan retired in Saint-Denis? You know, became, I don't know, some sort
he's
of like
he's just vibing right now.
He's vibing.
That's all he's doing. Vibing. He's just fucking vibing.
Fake. Did you sit him down somewhere? Like, did you get him comfortable? Or was it just a hard, like, was there a role-playing aspect to
even, you know what
like,
I mean?
Hey. Like come up, go saddle up at the bar, get a drink, and then like close application.
Yeah. You fucking roll credits. You know what I mean? Turns and starts telling his story to somebody else. The fucking end.
Yeah, I remember when I played the Outer Worlds. I got that bug for the asexual character that everyone loves, the fan favorite character that Patrick wrote that article about. I got the bug that meant that you can complete her quest, but the game will act as if she's died. And I finished
had that with
that
another
game.
Dude. Ah.
I finished the game, and I loved her quest so much, and all I wanted was to see the little description of like what happened to her, and I didn't see it. And then after release, I contemplated for a moment, will I replay this game now with a new save just to correct this? No, absolutely no. The fuck not. Like, I am going to go to this wiki right now because someone has beat this game day one and I'm going to look up what that ending is. Like,
I had that happen with another character in that game, but I didn't know that bug existed. And so when it got to that person's thing and it was like, well, and as for them, the Wanderer clearly didn't care enough about them to keep them alive. I was like, what are you talking about? Like, I didn't like him that much, but he was around. He's in my ship right now.
God. Yeah.
Can I read this next one?
Just yes, it, please. Like,
I think this is all in the same theme, but I just love Dylan's story. It's so never good. Finished Star Fox 64 because in an early mission, Slippy is shot down, necessitating a later rescue mission, but I was 6 years old and assumed I had failed to protect him and was traumatized by his apparent death and refused to continue playing out of fear that I would kill more of my cool animal friends.
Yeah, Dylan, that's some real anxiety hours up in here.
Arthur Morgan turns to the left to share his stories, and there's Star Fox, Fox McCloud, sipping back a whiskey, thinking of his dear friend Slippy. Like, I got stories of my own, Mark Morgan. Wow. Yeah, I never got in the cockpit again. Exactly. There's a third one of these here.
Yeah, this is another.
You can save Slippy.
You can save Slippy, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
For stalling that entire mission where you rescue him.
Yes, there's a different like critical path, multiple paths is the whole thing of that game, right? And there's definitely a way to avoid that just like by going on a different path, but I believe you can also just like it just changes a little bit of the boss fight where like instead of the boss holding a ship in its hand, it's just like a boss Like if you that lost a Zippy, right. It's like holding a Slippy in its hand.
Slippy, please.
Slippy, Zippy. Hey, I'm a frog. I zip, I slip, whatever. I don't know what that voice
great
was.
Great Slippy impersonation.
That's what Slippy. No, that's Zippy. That's Zippy. That's what Zippy sounds like.
Oh, sorry. That's Zippy. That's what Zippy sounds like. Slippy's cousin from the Bronx. Can I get this last one here from Tina Patrick, maybe? This seems like a you thing.
That's a very good.
Okay. Tina writes, I imported Demon's Souls for PS3 and received it the same week of the announcement of it coming to the US. Then I proceeded to play it with the assumption I was supposed to win my fight against the first boss, in the tutorial, no less. Every time I died to Vanguard, I'd impatiently restart the game to try again. I did this for about 20 minutes until I quit. And then went to bed wondering why I was so terrible at games, my heart. I had no idea you were supposed to die. And after I found out, everyone back to the game of embarrassment.
It's so funny.
I'm curious, what happens if you're just like fucking crushing it and like Vanguard
can't
kill
you? You can beat him.
Okay.
What happens then?
You go a little bit further and then one of the dragons in the game just auto kills you. Like the game just gates you back to the Nexus. If you do that, Austin, do you know if it shows up in World 4?
It must. It must.
It must, right? Because it doesn't get a boss meter in
World 4. No, but it does have a unique soul, so I don't know if you get that soul.
That's a good question. It does drop the unique soul.
So look into it. Anyway, damn, that game was good.
This next one, I don't know if anyone has never done it.
Right?
Like, did Kirk Hamilton send in this question?
It was Kirk Hamilton, a.k.a. Floozy.
UI is trash. All UI is a failure of imagination to imagine a world without it.
Never also have I ever sullied my screen with a mini map.
It's more about the UI elements you don't see.
Well, we should read it.
I have done this with one particular playthrough of a game, but only sort of and not really. Which is, remember I did that permadeath run of Zelda. Never ever have I used fast travel. Floozy writes, I have never used fast travel in any of my video games. I value immersion over most other aspects of the game. Not using fast travel makes the world feel so much more connected. And in the time that it takes me to travel between spaces, it gives me moments to reflect on events in the game itself, both recent and past. Time to appreciate the world design and just be in the moment. So I did that with that Breath of the Wild... permadeath run where I think it was that I wasn't allowed to fast travel at all, or I could only fast travel once I went to a shrine. I couldn't fast travel. I had to like get to a fast travel. I had to get to like a subway stop basically. And that was really hard because that game is great. I love exploring that world, but fast travel is very useful in it.
And so,
I can't think of a time.
This would have been true, actually, for me until Cyberpunk, pretty much. Like, I think maybe, like genuinely, I basically never fast-traveled in any Elder Scrolls, never, like, Assassin's Creed basically wouldn't do it. Witcher, certainly not. You always got to just ride across Velen and see some shit.
Certainly not.
But, like, Cyberpunk, I was kind of like, here's one way in which Night City is convincing. There are places you have to go where you're like, I do not want to deal with that. I just do not want to deal with the traffic.
Don't
want
to deal with the fucking traffic.
You have to go through the interchange and get on that bridge. And if you miss your exit, you end up in fucking Pacifica, and then you just got to drive all the way down to the fucking ocean, loop back, drive back up north. And like, I was like, or I could just take the bus.
Damn, I love that.
And actually, no, but in Cyberpunk, the thing they do is you're taking mass transit. And I was like, this doesn't feel immersion breaking for me. It just feels like, okay, I stand at this bus stop and I'm whisked to a different bus stop. And I was like, that's good. In fiction.
That's my Morrowind thing. The Morrowind had very similar in-game fast travel. You can't just open a map and do it. You had to go to one of the big bug buses. The Silt Striders would carry you around. It doesn't actually do it. You just kind of stand next to it, talk to the driver, and the driver says, where do you want to go? And then they take you wherever you want to go. But they're also one of the coolest things, like if you join the Mages Guild, well, guess what? The Mages will have teleportation circles from their various guild HQs around Morrowind or Vordenfall, the name of the little island you're on. But they're like in different cities and different places. And so it's like joining that guild gives you a bus pass to get to different places. And it feels feels great. All of the different like overlapping fast travel systems, there's boats also, all have different routes. And so like it does a really good job of making it feel as if the fast travel is diegetic and like built into the world. I love that. Morrowind's a good game. Does someone want to read this one from, or is this true for anyone? Has anyone done, I guess the way this one's phrased is not done it.
Nearly identical thing to this person a nearly identical age to a game that is very similar. Yeah. It's not a never have I ever, so I can't say that. But I have absolutely beaten a game through brute force. I don't remember a specific example. It was very similar to the story from JR. I was 8 and playing Phantasy Star 4. In this game, you need a special item, the Psycho Cane. That rocks.
That's sorry. Yeah.
I need the Psycho Cane.
Let me grow old and have a Psycho Cane, please.
Psycho Cane, is that what you use when you go sicko mode? That's right. Anyway.
That's the weapon from Psycho Pass, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. In this game, you need to use a special item, the Psycho Cane, to remove the boss's barrier so you can do more than 1 HP of damage per hit. Me, being 8, completely forgot about needing to use this item. Reasonable. And then again, being 8, I decided that it must just be that hard. So I grinded from level 20 to level 70 and had a knockdown dragout fight until I was depleted down to everything but the Psycho Cane. I don't think I could ever repeat the sinking sensation I felt upon realizing there was a much, much easier way to do this.
Oh my God.
No, whenever I was underleveled or like at the right level where it's still challenging in a Japanese RPG as a younger person, I would just grind endlessly until I was way over leveled in the game as a breeze. Like that was what I assumed you were supposed to be doing.
Miserable.
As a child.
Miserable.
Yeah. It makes the game so unfun.
I love it, but it's miserable. Yeah. Robert wrote in with a very similar story, but different genre. I have a gaming experience I don't think anyone else has had. In Splinter Cell Chaos Theory, I played nearly the entire game without realizing there's a really important alternate fire mode on the pistol. Splinter Cell's game mostly about stealth and not about killing dudes, so I remember trying to stealth my way through things, without getting into combat whenever possible, but I would occasionally use the pistol to take out a camera here and there. It wasn't easy, but I was doing a pretty good job at getting through the levels, even if some took a few tries, until an area towards the end of the game. There's a camera that is protected by a cage, so you can't shoot it, in a thin hallway with no cover. Getting spotted was a game over, so there must be something I was missing. I spent hours trying every gadget I had in this creepily red hallway with that one infuriating camera. Maybe there's an alternate route, maybe I can shimmy under it, maybe controller port 2. Finally, I gave up and Googled the solution, which was people saying to use the pistol. But I had tried that, you can't shoot the camera. Turns out what you can do is use the alternate firing mode on the pistol, which turns it into an EMP. The EMP would take out the electronics that you aimed at for a short time, letting you get past cameras or laser grids or what have you. Any other time I had encountered those in the game, I had found an alternate route or shot the camera. It was both exciting and also infuriating to discover that I had missed this very useful tool for the vast majority of the game.
There would never be a scenario where a well-respected game critic would get through the majority of a game, beat it, review it, and like not find major gameplay features along the way that would make sections a little bit easier.
That's mean.
Rage was Rage's fault. Okay? I didn't fuck up. Rage fucked up.
What about Control? Was Control the other one?
Yeah, that was...
Control, I had a perfectly valid experience with Control. I just didn't look. They were optional side missions.
Uh-huh.
And Jessie Faden takes care of her people. She's a conscientious director, and she's like, I am going to deal with the hiss, and then I'll deal with all this other stuff later. And so I just went and I took care of business using a few basic powers. And yes, it turns out there were some other tools in the tool belt, but
Rob, I can't remember. And I know astrology is fake, but are you a Virgo?
I am a Leo.
That also makes a lot of fucking sense.
I'm just going to summarize this next one from Drew and Drew's friend Zach. The long and short is that they had a very similar issue with Bloodborne as Tina did with Demon's Souls, except the thing that happened is, you know, there's that werewolf at the beginning of...
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well,
yeah.
After that, you go out past the, I guess you come back and fight the wolf. I don't remember exactly, but
no, the wolf is gone when you,
I thought the wolf was gone too. So maybe I suspect that they're misremembering this part of it, but you go out into the world and end up fighting people. And the thing is, you're supposed to do that with weapons, but they didn't pick up weapons from the hunter's dream. You pick your weapon from like one of these little messenger guys. They give you one of the first three starting weapons. And so they played for hours just going around with just the fists, swinging fists at people.
Oh, god damn.
It's a rough one. That's a rough one.
Wow. It turns out from Drew and Zach, this is a great sentence. It turns out that you are not, in fact, supposed to play the beginning of the game over and over for almost 2 hours with just your bare fists. Wow.
Yeah, it turns out.
What's fascinating about these stories, and the one that I didn't, you know, we got the one about Phantasy Star. Yeah. That one made a lot of sense to me. Because, and then the Splinter Cell one, I was actually kind of taken aback when we got to, and finally I gave up and Googled the solution.
Right.
Just because that's like such the disconnect between some of these stories is... anything that you think you're doing wrong, if you just type that phrase into Google, you'll find someone else that like ran into that same issue. Whereas back in the day, there just wasn't, you know, that's why like Nintendo Power was rad every month when they had like the maps that you could pull out.
It would say, make sure to use the Psycho Cane. I mean, Nintendo Power one, because Phantasy Star 4 is a Genesis game. But, you know, a magazine, whatever. I just want
to
make sure
you had to wait for them to highlight it. Maybe it wasn't what they like usually just one strategy guide per month.
Do you know the X-Men one? Do y'all know the X-Men Genesis game thing? Oh my God. It's brilliant and cruel.
So
if you don't know this,
but I know it.
So the X-Men Genesis game, the premise to the story, if I'm remembering right, is that I want to say Professor X has been kidnapped, but maybe that comes later. But a virus fucks up the Danger Room and locks the X-Men in the Danger Room, and you have to try to push through the Danger Room and go through a bunch of different, like, you know, greatest hits of X-Men fights and stuff like that. Eventually, you know, free yourself from it and then get on to Astro and M and fight Magneto and blah, 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 blah. However, there is towards the end of the game, I want to say it's after you beat Mojo's world. You beat Mojo. You destroy a computer. And then it says in like black or white text on a black screen, it says reset the computer. I think maybe it actually says that on a screen inside of in the level even. And you go like, okay, like I'm like swinging, I'm Gambit swinging my iron rod. Nothing is resetting. How do I reset the fucking computer? And what you have to do is hit the reset button on your Genesis, which uses a trick of the way RAM works on the Genesis to reboot it. And it has like a unique restartup thing that looks like a cool hacker thing is happening.
Whoa.
And you end up back in the Danger Room, and the Danger Room has been broken from this like virus.
Eat your fucking heart out, Kojima.
Yeah, it abso-fucking-lutely. It rules. The thing is, as it was, that in more than one case, I've heard people say that to reset it, they hit the hard switch instead of hitting the reset button, which means that
fair.
Which is fair. I linked you the thing, too, so you can see. So, yeah, you're just standing around as Professor X is talking on screens, and at the top of the screen it says, reset the computer now, and you get, like, a Matrix binary green and you know, black screen, virus program suspended. It's sick. It's really sick. However, if you were 8, how would you know what that meant or what to do?
No.
Well, especially when, like, resetting the machine means losing progress.
Right. There's no saves.
A lot of games didn't even have password systems.
Right.
So you were just like, do that 2 hours over again.
And that game was hard. That's a hard video game. That's no Turtles in Time.
How does this work in emulation? I guess, like, they must emulate.
You can emulate a soft reset versus a hard reset.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I think I've done it in emulation. Now that I think about it, I can think of myself on a desktop playing that with, like, you know, on whatever the Genesis emulator was, you know, as a teenager.
note to self, Patrick tried to track down whoever programmed this in
the game.
Idea.
What a
monster.
Honestly.
Hideo Kojima. Wait a second.
Shit.
Who wants to take the next one?
Well, I haven't done this. I don't know if anyone has done it.
Okay.
Let me look.
Go for it, Kita.
Okay. Never have I ever hurt myself while playing a non-VR game. From Brian, they write, I injured myself playing SNES as a kid. I'm sure it has happened with VR, Wii, etc., but probably not too common with standard console gaming. I went off a jump in the Port Town map in F-Zero. When my car jumped a gap, I also jumped and tipped backwards in my chair and cut my head open on the desk behind me. Oh. I probably should have gotten stitches. I'm so sorry.
Brian, I hope you're okay.
I hope. I have an answer to this, but it doesn't really count. It kind of counts. It's not VR.
What was it?
It's a DDR. I've definitely twisted a fucking ankle wearing socks on a too slippery DDR pad and just gone down when I played DDR a lot in my teenage years. But that's not really in the spirit of the Never Have Ever, I feel like.
Yeah, this is about games that don't require you to use your physical body, feel like.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I ever really did. Looking I think, for. I haven't.
I mean, when the Switch came out, my reaction was, oh, goody, I can actually play games lying down completely horizontally now, which is how I wanted to play games for like my whole life. So I just like not a lot of physical motion on playing things.
On your back or on your stomach?
On my back, covers over my head, like the screen. I'm holding it
so
right
you just
here
hold
to cover
it. Don't your arms
up.
Get fucking exhausted? Like that sounds
yeah,
like
they do,
way
and then you roll over. So you're leaning on your arms like this,
right? And then you roll back once that's uncomfortable. You just keep rolling
exactly.
Back and forth.
You just kind of become a burrito in the blankets. There, it's kind of nice.
We found.
By the way, the toasted cheddar chalupa just looks like it. God. Like it is really
still looking
good.
At you.
Don't
you get some
talk
Taco
about
Bell
Taco
later?
Bell. It's gonna make me want to eat Taco Bell.
Well, just we did very quickly just find one of the designers on the X-Men Genesis game. Mm-hmm. Bruce Straley, who you might know as the director of Uncharted 2, Last of Us, Last of Us Left Behind, and Uncharted 4, which is a weird professional arc to have.
We should
very funny.
Put a break in here, actually. I'm just realizing.
We should take a break. Let's take a break. We're not only doing
here in the last 10 minutes of the podcast.
We got 20.
I gotta put the mid-roll somewhere.
I got you. We'll be right back.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
All right, we are back with a little bit more Never Have I Ever 2020 video games holiday edition. Rob.
So Never Have I Ever, and admittedly, some of the reason for this is I have never gotten comfortable enough with Excel or Google Sheets to really be like my language for organizing shit is going to be a spreadsheet. Like generally I am a where did I put my Moleskine? But also there it's very rare that I'm so far in that I want to do this. Never have I ever made a spreadsheet for a single-player game.
I want to tell you all about a video game called Tokimeki Memorial Girl Side.
What? Should Let's I Google go. This or should I just let the...
What do you think it is?
Hold on. Rob.
Okay.
What do you think it is?
Sounds like a visual novel.
It absolutely is. It's a spinoff from a pornographic boy-oriented visual novel. This is non-pornographic and for girls, so it's a bunch of it's not one of the first dating sims, but it's the first dating sim that a lot of people my age encountered because there were some very easily accessible English translations out for these games. I just dropped a fan site in here that I remember from when I played the game and consulted religiously. I will say it was less a literal spreadsheet because I am also not very adept at Excel than it was sort of like a drawing of a literal school schedule that, you know, In the game, you're in high school and you're going to classes, and you have to raise your stats in order to become attractive to certain kinds of men. There's a bad boy. There is there's the nerd guy. Yeah, problematic gender politics for sure, but I gobbled this game up with a fucking spoon. I was like 13 and very lonely. So in order to do that, you have to schedule yourself like within an inch of your life in order to really get some of the rarer or more interesting characters to like you. I know for one character, if you're a bad boy, I always wanted to make my characters smart because the only thing people ever complimented me on as a child was being smart. So, but I couldn't do that because the bad boy character would not start to like you less if you got good grades. Right. Yeah. So I would, you know, kind of just schedule out, like play around with different kinds of schedules to see what was the best way to min-max my school day in order to get different boys to like me and go on dates with me. They're very compelling games, I will say, although I gotta say there's a mini game. These are for the DS, so I played them on a DS emulator on my computer, and there's a mini game that requires the touch screen. You have to make chocolate, and not only is it in Japanese, like obviously the people who made the ROM couldn't figure out how to change the graphic on the screen, so it would just say right and left instead of right and left in Japanese. The latency on that emulator was very, 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 very bad. So every year you just give horseshit chocolates to all your crushes, and it's still haunting me. To date all the boys, I looked up every single piece of information and like looked at every single walkthrough and then made a highly like stratified schedule of events, like particular dates where I needed to hit particular milestones. God.
See, this is how I need to be approaching Persona, but I'm just not going to do it.
Yeah. Uh-huh. This ship primed me for Persona, absolutely. Especially the part where you do everything right and then you still don't get a love confession at the end.
What?
For random reasons.
Yeah, you could just end up alone at the end of the school year, Rob.
What?
Yeah.
Listen, it just be like that.
You have to go on other dates with people other than the guy that you're interested in to make because if you don't do that, your guy will be less interested in you because you're just an unpopular weirdo. So, but if you do that and you leave the guys on too much, they will get angry at you. And that if they get too angry, they will ruin your reputation.
You have to play it cool, but also don't be a tease.
Like low-key, it's a horror game about how awful it is to date as a woman, like in high school especially.
Incredible.
Hold on.
Yeah.
This Taku Komori figure seems sketch.
Oh my god. We're not, Rob.
I don't.
Pick
I don't
your
Tokomeki Memorial LP with Rob Zachney and Gita Jackson challenge.
Why don't you scroll down to
his only hobby is cooking, but this hair, this person
have
can't
you
be
seen,
up to any good.
He can Christopher Weatherfield, the artistic guy.
Tom Hiddleston?
Oh, that's Tom Hiddleston.
Oh, hello.
Yeah, Christopher Weatherfield.
Tom Hiddleston.
He's the arty guy, but he's portrayed as like a you know, lackadaisical American. You know how Americans are always.
Really? Because he looks so posh. Like, I expect this dude, like, he'd be like, hello, I created this equestrian painting for you.
Quick question. There's another person here who likes cooking. Taku Komori. Is he okay? What's up with Taku?
This is the one I was like, this.
Oh,
Taku
my God.
Komori,
I forgot. For the re-release
out.
I thought you
of
meant
game,
Notoharu
like,
Misaki, who also is cooking and seems fine. Yeah. I'm sorry.
This is a special bonus character for the re-release of this game on the DS, where they did like, they do two releases of the game, the first release and the second release with the better art and new characters. So this guy is the special Hikakomori character.
Okay.
Yeah, like, in order to get with him, you have to just remember to go to his house and give him
his
homework.
You bring him his homework every day? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah,
yes.
Sure.
Yeah.
Hey,
so he is having
problems. Why is
he
holding his arm like he is, which one is the detective? Is L the L is the detective in Death Note, right?
I mean, he's almost definitely playing with the same tropes or touching on that. These are all anime archetypes that are meant to apply to things. The guy right above him, Taro Majima, he's just like an abusive guy, but he's like that anime type of abusive guy where he like comes up to you and is like, I think you're a fucking idiot, you stupid bitch. And then your girl just like, wow, so manly.
Swoon.
Right. Swoon.
Hobbies, spending time on his yacht. Fuck off.
Yeah. Katsumi Shiba, you know, I'm just glad that there's an AU version of Guts from Berserk who doesn't get traumatized and just gets to get jacked with the boys.
Uh-huh. Yeah. He's the best protagonist, I actually think he's very sensitive and nice, and like the whole plot line with him is like discovering his sensitive side. What's cool about this game also is like you have these female rivals, but if they get jealous of you for dating the guy that they want to date, your goal is just to be nice to them for as long as possible until they accept that, you know, this person likes you back and they're like, our friendship is too important. That is like the one thing I love about this game is this very, very positive representation of female friendship.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Sheba seems to have joined the baseball team. Anyway, we're going to keep moving through this. Does anyone else have one on this list that they want to jump to here?
I was distracted by the boys.
That's fair. Yeah. That's fair. You know
there's
what?
There's a lot of them.
Here's one that I like. There's a lot of them. You're right. This one is from Michael.
Oh my god. Sorry.
Okay.
Sorry, Rob, I'm very sorry.
Okay. I think I have never done this really. Never have I ever trained extremely hard to improve at a game. Hi, my name is Michael. Doombongo everywhere else. I played Jedi Knight Academy a lot on release in 2003. After dueling dozens of players over weeks on an often full server, I realized that one player, Bob, was better than any of the other players that I'd seen. I wanted to be great at dueling people with my lightsaber. I was 12 years old, and I asked Bob if he would be my master. It was typical for better players in clans to have Padawans in the Jedi Knight games, and there were ranks much like a military. Clans were taken very seriously, and the saber combat is a very complex system. Bob and I took training very seriously and would practice for several hours at a time. I would often play on a Saturday from 8 p.m. till 8 a.m., practicing training routines Bob designed for me.
Did Patrick's mom vet this dude?
I don't think so.
Nance?
I would often practice my lightsaber right swing input depth and accuracy by drawing a line over a graphical line on a wall. You could tell the difference between a lightsaber line made by just the tip, the goal, or more of the blade. Also, the camera was locked to the player, so moving the camera with your mouse would shift where the tip of the saber was at all times, even during an animation. I would soon begin incorporating jumps and forced jump delays, crucial difference, to change the timing and manipulate the animation of my lightsaber by drawing the same line. I knew none of this. Bob guided me through the entire meta, their strengths and weaknesses. I sincerely spent months of in-game playtime over the course of a year glancing drawing over that line again and again, all in the pursuit of accuracy. Eventually, movement was included in tandem with obstacle courses, with several stormtrooper NPCs spawned motionless for me to strike. I got very good at flipping and spinning with my lightsaber, swinging just to get the tip clean through a player's head as they made the move. Headshots did the most damage, and the longer you could keep the tip of the saber inside their head, the more damage it would do. And I'll be clear, I played this game a lot. That is like the longer meaning, did you keep it in there for 0.8 seconds or for 2 seconds? Because you're going to kill if it's 2 seconds. And we're talking about tenths of seconds here. Right. Bob never spoke about anything outside of the game. I never learned their real name. I've never known anyone to take training with someone in Jedi Knight Academy as seriously as I did with Bob. I won't be surprised to learn they exist, but I'm sure there are very few. Here is a Wikipedia page. It's actually a JediAcademy.net page of the players Bob is associated with. And it seems to be the Jedi Academy Aurochs, the official sports team of the Jedi Academy. These are apparently in-game clan that took shit super, super, super
Never
serious.
Never have I ever. Yeah. It's just Patrick finding stories to work on in 2021. Never have I ever taken stories from a podcast. No, I'm doing it all the time right
you
now.
You keep this doc. There's a lot of stuff
Bob,
in here we didn't
where are
get
you?
To. We got to find Bob. We got to bring him together.
This is the most incredible story I've ever heard in my fucking life. I have to say that this is something that could have been so nerdy to hear about, but is instead one of the coolest fucking things I've ever heard. My guy, you are a Jedi. You just are a Jedi. You became a Jedi.
God, it's so
the fact
funny.
That this dude, Bob, just wanted to teach his craft and nothing else. Like,
I love that.
Oh my God, did Bob live like on a mountaintop monastery and just like you were blessed, well, Michael.
He lives
like
in Coruscant.
Bob doesn't speak to people, but
new headcanon, Bob's Grogu.
I don't think Bob lives at Coruscant. I think Bob's too good for the Jedi Council. Oh, Bob yeah. left the. Bob is actually a gray Jedi. Thing that's
right. No, stupid. Sure.
That
yeah.
we all agree. But Bob is one of them. Bob yeah. left the Jedi behind to just go focus on his saber work. He thinks that there is purity in the duel and in the sword work, but does not want to get caught up in council politics or any of this Republic shenanigans
right,
stuff.
Right.
Patrick, you. Go ahead, Gita.
For the next certain point of view book, we got to write about Bob.
We got to write about Bob. Absolutely.
What about Bob? You know, the famous comedy film. I don't see Bob listed here, so we're going to have to reach out.
You're going to have to
dig. Forward me this email, someone, and then I'm going to ask who Bob's username was, and we're going to do some...
It's deep. This is an incredible story.
I'm forwarding it to you now.
For one of for the season of Apex Legends where they introduced Watson, I did actually download Kovacs and was like, I am determined to become better at first-person shooters because it's a type of game that interests me, but I've never been good at playing. And I had a bad social experience in Apex that made me stop playing Apex, but I do actually think like practicing with Kovacs made me better at Destiny when I finally picked that up. Like I can tell the difference from playing Destiny about my accuracy, and I like pay attention to where I'm standing, and I'm like a lot better at aiming and just not immediately fucking panicking, which is what I do in shooting games mostly.
I've never done the actual. Go ahead, Kato.
To play off what Gita was saying, I used Aim Lab, but like when we were starting to get into Valorant, like a lot, I saw like streamers doing like a couple reps before their like games, and I was like, you know what, I've never actually tried to see like what happens when you use these things, and I saw a marked improvement in like the speed from just like doing a couple of like regular just like quick shot sort of exercises mm-hmm. before actually going into the game itself.
If nothing else, it cemented my muscle memory for my hand, arm, and wrist. So now I'm a lot better at placing the mouse cursor where I want it to be on the screen without even looking, because I know what my hand is supposed to feel like.
Totally. I did link, for people who are curious, Michael did include, please watch this extremely good video of the height of JKA lightsaber skills. Mm. And it is the most, this video is from like 2011 or something.
Legendary frag vid aesthetic here.
It's 100%. Yeah, exactly that. Exactly that. It's like someone in a spectator mode watching as people duel.
Fuck, these are cool as hell though.
They're cool as hell. They're very good at this fucking game. It's sick, honestly.
Yeah, this high key whips.
It does. It really does. People are doing some wild backflips and shit.
Revelation 4.
You can find this video by searching for Jedi Academy Revelation 4. And also, Patrick, you should watch this video because it looks like there's a lot of usernames here.
Yeah, there's a lot going. I'm scrubbing 6 minutes in.
Taking notes.
Patrick, just remember.
A little peek behind the veil. This is what journalism is. It's getting Michael a really good email and being like, hey, I wonder if I can figure out who all of these people are.
Michael entrusted us with a very important memory, and if the reality is not awesome, we should not.
No. If Bob sucks, this stays here. You'll see another part of journalism, which sometimes you have an idea which sounds like, this is going to be the greatest story I've ever told. And then you get like 5 minutes into it and you just go, nope. Like, we're just walking away from this one.
On second thought, no thank you.
On second thought, gotta back off.
When did this game? No.
This game was so good.
Look, I played very few games. I had an N64 well into the PS2 era. Like, into the, like...
Academy came out on Xbox.
It did. Yeah, no, that's correct. 2003.
Didn't even have friends that had Xboxes. We were playing, like, SNES games.
Well, I just mean, it was... The Xbox got, like, a weird set of exclusives. Like... Mm-hmm. Like, we were talking about this recently, Austin. Like KOTOR only came out on Xbox, right?
No PS2 version of that game. Yeah.
And
this game looks sick as shit. What the fuck?
Yeah. Well, so it was the fourth, because Dark Forces, then Dark Forces 2 Jedi Knight, then Jedi Outcast, which is the end of the Kyle Katarn like trilogy.
Well, I guess in Dark Forces, the original, you don't get a lightsaber.
Exactly. Right. But the first one, you get a lightsaber.
Because he hasn't discovered his Force abilities yet.
That's correct. Whereas in Dark Forces 2... he gets
and it discovers force. His family was killed because of their force sensitivity.
Exactly.
Like, the Yo, Empire Disney, just... get someone to make a Dark Forces reboot.
Dude, it's already underway. Have you been watching The Mandalorian? Mandalorian.
That shit's happening.
I know, but I want to control an analog stick.
Give Patrick a lightsaber. You do like one more, two more? Yeah.
More.
Does anyone, what else jumps out here if you're looking at these titles?
I haven't done this next one that I just highlighted here, and I think this is fun.
Okay, sure. Go for it. Yeah, it is fun.
Yeah, never have I ever created a mod for a game. I have been tempted sometimes to make Sims mods, but I have not actually done it. That's close as I've gotten. But Gabriel writes, hey, Waypoint friends, it's long. Sorry, don't worry about it. I'm the premier modder for Minor Key Games Neon Struct. I'm also the only modder in 5 years since its launch, which is a real shame because David Pittman, the game's developer, created and supported some pretty comprehensive modding tools for the game. If you hadn't played it, Neon Struct is an indie stealth slash immersive sim game from 2015 about a surveillance state, paranoia, and crouch jumping. It's probably not even Minor Key's biggest game, but David released a detailed guide on how to mod it, and it caught my eye as someone who's always wanted to make games but never had the skills or perseverance. It also allowed modding in the sense that you could create essentially create a complete game with the tools. Besides the restraint of having to use the existing assets, you can make your own levels, dialogue, missions, and string multiple levels together to craft a complete narrative experience in a way most modding tools don't let you. So I made a little original story out of pieces cobbled together from Neon Struct's assets. Rave reviews from dozens of people that have played it. It gave me the confidence to try and branch out and make something of my own from scratch. That didn't ever pan out. I'm still no programmer. But this tale is mostly to serve as a shout out to the game's creator for being so incredibly kind and patient in answering my zillions of questions over months. He personally tutored me through the whole process and even provided additional source code for my reference. If anyone's looking to mod a game but wants more control over the whole experience, I highly recommend looking into the Neon Struct modding. I'd love to see how other people take the pieces and put them back together to do their own thing. Haven't failed to make my own games in recent years. I'm thinking about getting back into modding Neon Struct too. My dozens of fans in the Steam Workshop await. This is a lovely, lovely, lovely story.
It's so
and I
nice.
Definitely want to check out these mods and this game.
Also, Neon Struct is sick and people have slept on it and people should try it, especially if you're like... are fans and you're like, oh, I'd love to play a independent cyberpunk immersive sim game. It's very simple in its visual design. It's by Minor Key Games, who also made Eldritch, that kind of roguelite, like Cthulhu roguelike, roguelite years ago, kind of first person game. I like this game a lot, and I did not know that it had such a vibrant mod tool set.
What a lovely and generous developer also. I know,
right?
Like, part of the reason why I was interested in modding for The Sims is that similarly, The Sims has a built-in infrastructure for putting mods into the game, and there is a section on the forum for simmers to collaborate with each other and ask questions of the devs in terms of creating and finishing their own mods. So that kind of community support is so essential, and it's so fun to watch games that truly embrace that and truly embrace that as part of the culture of their game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's going to do it for us today. We'll be back with some additional content, I believe, later in the week. No idea what our schedule looks like at this point. It is what it is. Thank you to Too Mellow for letting us use the track that we're using that I don't know the name of. It's late. This is the last thing we're recording on this day of recording. I know that earlier in one of the episodes, what we had said was we're doing them all in one day. Well, welcome to Waypoint. I'm Austin. You can find me at Austin_Walker on Twitter. Where can people find you, Kato?
At @A_Kato_appears. And I think the Too Mellow song is a Too Mellow original because it's just called End of Your Podcast Intro. So.
Oh,
damn, what a cool name. TwoMellowMakes.bandcamp.com is the address to buy Mellow's music. Patrick, where can people find you?
Bob can find me at Patrick Lubbock on Twitter.
Bob, if you're out there, please, can you searching imagine for Bob. If Bob is a Waypoint listener and Bob heard that story?
He heard
Bob's
this
having a bad
a single
holiday.
Tear yeah. that goes down his face.
Bob is like far from family, can't go home because of COVID. Bob is like, is there anything that ties us together in the world? I used to believe in the force, Bob says to himself. And there
he's
was
been reaching out through the force for
needed,
so long, and finally he's felt a connection.
Yeah. Bob is Luke in The Last Jedi. Yes. You know, he's left his craft behind, but wants an excuse to download it on Steam and train.
The mouse
train
hovered
Kato.
Over it three times. Shit. Oh, please, Kato, hell you have to go work with Bob.
Wait, you can play this game on a modern machine right now? On a PC?
Oh yeah, this game's out. This game I think is like dirt cheap. You should play these games.
That's
these games
fucked
all
up.
Cool.
Are
these
all the ones? Games.
Because it's been like Asper or whatever that's been like going back and like re-releasing all of these games like the last couple of years.
This game is $10. This game is $10.
Hell yeah.
The first of the, I think, you know, all said you're probably looking at, let's see. Well, there's the complete, the Jedi Knight collection is 1871. That's
hell
four
yeah.
games starting with the Doom-like Dark Forces. And then it's what if you put lightsabers in Doom in Jedi Knight? Then it's like, hey, let's actually just make that its own fucking game, please.
Yeah.
And that is called Jedi Knight 2, Jedi Outcast. And then I guess actually it's that and then another $10 for Jedi Academy, which is the one that has like the best saber dueling. It's like the one that was like, we figured this out. We made it. We really
also, like,
it.
I remember because that's the only one I didn't play.
Yep.
Because I feel like it was reviewed kind of mediocrely. Like the story was like,
the
story
community
sort of whatever.
Loves it. The multiplayer was so good that it still had a huge community. And I just like, by the time I got to it, it was too late. But I think all the Kyle Katarr games rule. You know, it was one of those games that was very much like when you do the bad thing, you get to do force lighting. When you do the good thing, you could force heal, you know,
right.
taught us how the force works.
We love that.
Okay, was it basically the same? Because I was like, because I remember like there's the most famous like New Games Journalism piece about that. But that was Outcast. So was it the same system in Academy?
Yeah, it's
basically?
All the same. 100%.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like same.
They got
three stances, three schools.
I think that it got increasingly complex after Outcast and then Academy were the more complex ones. Jedi Knight is not as complex as all that. Though actually, now I think about it, you know what?
No, Jedi Knight is not complex. Like, that I know. Like it's Outcast that introduces the idea of
the styles.
Multiple styles, multiple swings. And like, so you did have to learn like, okay, if I do a heavy attack in this style, the animation will like be this.
Yes.
And so immediately, because when lightsabers come in Dark Forces 2 Jedi Knight, it's basically like, yes, you can duel a little bit, you block a little bit, but the enemy characters are so fast that real quickly you're like, what if instead I just circle strafed and cut them a lot? Especially because I'm a light side Jedi and my powers don't do shit. But if I'd gone the dark side tree, I could just fuck these dudes up.
Yeah, totally. All right. We're going to wrap up now for real. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Did everyone say where they're from on the internet? I think.
Did you miss Rob?
Yeah, we got that.
Rob Zachney on Twitter.
I'm hitting here. Add, download. Jedi. Man, Raven Software also made Heretic 2, one of my all-time favorite games.
They made good games.
Raven Software made all these, and they made Heretic 2, which is just a beautiful, great game.
Yeah.
We should be ready by the time that the next save point rolls around to have a Jedi Academy, like... fucking duel off.
That would be a good late night.
Yeah.
Just like, hey, just Austin, you and me, we keep trying to make these shitty horror blocks work.
What if we
Done. We're playing Jedi Academy
playing Jedi
with some sort of mod that lets us do co-op.
We all just become Jedi.
No, let me pitch you what we do. We do Jedi Academy and we do an open rotating like fight club. And it's just nightclub, fight club. You know what I mean? And fans can call in, or not call in, but can come into the game to play us, and you get one chance to beat me or you, Patrick, at our 4 a.m. bullshit overnight while we're drunk on Coronas or whatever. Better than Superman 64, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Man. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
God, I would
Star
do
Wars Jedi
right
Knight Collection 2620. Hell yes.
That's what I'm saying.
Add to cart.
Boom, add to cart. Those games are fun.
I think some of these are on Switch, too.
I believe it. I don't
here's
know if I
another. Here's an alternate idea.
Okay. Yeah.
We use that as a combat resolution system for a Star Wars RPG.
We do an RPG, but then we have to go to Jedi Knight to resolve the fight.
Yeah.
That's tough because then your GM has to be a pro because your GM has to be good enough.
If only we knew someone who was a pro GM.
No,
he probably
never
tires of running sessions.
I mean someone who's a pro at Jedi Academy because they have to be able to really characterize the different characters with their fighting style. Mm-hmm. They can't just win all the time. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So,
but like lose good.
But lose good. Make it fun. Yeah, exactly. All right, that's going to do it for us for real today. I hope everyone has a good remainder of the day and week, and we'll be back soon with more. Until then, fuck capitalism. Go home.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Peace.
Hey, Patrick, you ready to join the force? We've got switch codes for Star Wars Jedi Knight Jedi Academy in this email from March 26th.
What?
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Patrick, it's on.
March 26th, I had a new baby. I'm sorry. I'm going to be the code wizard. But
also,
in March,
Bob might be in there. Yeah, like Bob's friend code.
Bob.
He's like, I, it's been a long time since I drew the blade, but I think with this new switch, you know,
I can play as much duel as I used
again.
Yeah.
While you were playing Pokemon, I was studying the lightsaber.
Yeah.
In Mandalorian, the Seeing Stone. That's
Bob's coming.
He's like, you know, I used to play so much, but, you know, my career really took off. Started getting all those acting gigs. I did in Fargo.
All right.
Peace, y'all.
Have a good weekend, everyone.
Night, everybody.
Bye.
Have a great weekend. Bye.